Hi, hello, and welcome to another episode of The Dunker Spot. We are part of the Basketball News Podcast Network. I am your host, Nikaias Duncan, and joining me, as always, is my co-host, Steve Jones Jr. How are you, sir?
Doing well, doing great. Excited to be here. Thank you, Dunkers, for embracing your bounce. New year, new Mike, Nikaias. I mean, new me. See, you sold one of them PS5s. Salute.
Okay, here we go.
Sorry.
I have and have had a singular PS5 that I plan on keeping. Microphone's the microphone. We have a boom arm for the microphone now, so I don't have to be trying to navigate that while trying to record. Just make it a little bit easier for me. Hopefully the audio quality is a little bit better. But it is a new year. Welcome to, you know, very happy to bring it in with you. I hope your holiday season was well. I'm excited. The vibes are good. Basketball is rolling. The Philadelphia Football Eagles are back in the playoffs. We are riding the high vibes over here until further notice. So that's where I'm at.
All right. I like it. Let's keep the vibes going. I will not be a momentum killer early in this episode.
Saving it for later. I see. Let's start with some WNBA news. Becky Hammon, new head coach of the Las Vegas Aces. I, for one, am excited for Becky to get this opportunity. I am selfishly excited for the Aces to embrace modern basketball a bit. I am excited to see what this offense is going to look like around Asia Wilson. They do have some decisions to make with the roster. Liz Cambage is a free agent. Andrew McCautry is also a free agent. So I wonder if one or both of those players are going to be back or not. But this seems like the time for, I mean, the Aces really wanted Becky. They made the full court press. She accepted. What was your initial reaction when the news came down the pipeline?
I was stunned. I felt like it came out, Thursday at midnight or something like that?
Yeah.
So I wasn't really prepared. And it was one of those things that dropped without any, notice or tea leaves or anything like that. So I was like, whoa, I'm genuinely stunned. Excited for Becky Hammon to be a head coach. Salute to her for that. Well-deserved opportunity. Obviously, the Aces knew what they wanted, went out and got it. The one thing that stood out to me, I guess just thinking, it's such a weird deal when it comes to coaching because it's such a reminder of how much timing and opportunity and luck goes into it. And if you think about what Becky said herself, because her name has been out there, attached to head coaching jobs for a little bit, and her revealing the feedback being, you've only been in San Antonio and you've never been a head coach. Well, that tells a lot. But it's also a reminder, your resume is your resume, but it needs to have some weight. And if you think about it, it's kind of wild that you've only been in San Antonio is now a negative thing. When there are people who have cashed many a check off of working in San Antonio at a specific time. But that's just how it works. I mean, you look at my resume, it says Nets and Grizzlies, but it don't hit the same as if it said Nets and Grizzlies now. Those are just facts. So you just need to have it at the right time. You got to be hot at the right time, attached to success at the right time, and the doors will open for you. So I'm glad she gets her shot. I'm glad that she gets a shot that she wants and she has an opportunity to kind of not just coach, but also manage the team and, you know, put herself in that kind of position to be seen the way she sees herself. That's important.
I applaud, her work just has to be incredible. We've seen it as a player. We've seen it as an assistant coach. And now she's taking this Aces job as the coach and GM. So she's going to be trying to get her own staff together. Trying to get the roster together, trying to catch up on who the Aces have been over the last few seasons, while also maintaining assistant coach duties with the Spurs until the season ends. And I just wonder how on earth, and it's mostly a rhetorical question, but how on earth is she going to navigate all that? She has a ridiculous belief in herself, ridiculous in a good way, to clarify. But this is a ridiculous belief in herself. It just kind of speaks to the type of person, the type of worker that she is. I certainly wish her all the best. It is, I'm glad you brought up, like, the Spurs point, because it is kind of odd to me that she's gotten looks, but she hasn't gotten looks, if that makes sense. Like, I could fully understand her being rubbed the wrong way with, you know, taking the interview with Portland in particular. And then, you know, lack of experience cited, whatever other whispers you want to put out there. And then it's the Chauncey Billups hire. And we've seen how that has gone in Portland to this point. And so if you're Becky, you're just like, okay, I want a shot. I would love it on the NBA level, but ultimately I want a shot. I want a team. If you're not going to get in the NBA, like, getting with the Aces and not only getting, you know, again, getting the head coaching job, but also getting the GM job too. Like, you, it's hard to top that. And so, like, I don't even feel like that's a real loss for her, honestly. Like, it's a great job opportunity for her, one that she definitely deserves. One the Aces really wanted to give her, considering they had Bill Laimbeer. It wasn't like Bill Laimbeer's contract expired, they're looking for a replacement. Like, he was the coach. And they're like, oh no, let's make the push for Becky. Becky takes the Aces job while two other WNBA jobs were actually vacant. One has been filled since. Sandy Brondello is now the coach of the New York Liberty. She was the Phoenix Mercury coach. Speaking of, that was random. For the Mercury to make that kind of finals run, and then at the end of the season, it's like, okay, I think it's time for us to go our separate ways. Let's do something different. Huh. Interesting. So I'm interested to see what Sandy looks like in New York. But to the Becky point, again, congrats to her. I'm excited. Very excited to see what this offense is going to look like. That's where I'm at.
You're just excited for the hope of threes, and I really can't wait till it's more post-ups and high-lows.
We will cross that bridge when we come to it. I would just say, like, in terms of the threes in particular, like, the bar is quite literally the floor right now. So, like, if they're eighth in three-point rate, like, that's fine. Like, give me eighth. Give me eighth. They don't have to go from last to first. Like, just give me eighth with the talent that they're going to have on this roster. Just fully unleash Asia Wilson. Let her take a couple of games. Like, that could be a podcast in and of itself. But anyway, Thank You to the Aces is awesome. Let's get into some not-so-fun stuff. We had a little bit of an issue in Houston recently. Kevin Porter Jr. and Christian Wood both were suspended the game because of their antics during their most recent outing. Kevin Porter Jr. and Stephen Silas got into it during halftime. There was an item thrown. Not sure what the item thrown was, but item was thrown. He left the arena. As for Christian Wood, was late to shoot around to that game. Had his effort kind of criticized. Refused to enter the game in the second half. Did not play. Is the one game suspension enough to you? Do you think there needs to be more done? Where are you at on that?
Well, I think it's good for Coach Silas for putting his foot down and holding these guys accountable. There are times where, as a coach, if you're in a youth movement type scenario, the youth can run wild a little bit. And it's good for him to say, no, we're not doing X, Y, and Z. As far as the suspensions goes, you really had no choice, especially once it got out. Mm-hmm. Something had to happen. I don't think it's deal breakers for either of them, but it's definitely not a good look for either guy. I would probably say when it comes to Kevin Porter Jr., just has to be careful, because you can only have so many of these types of incidents attached to your name. And, like, I know basketball is a game of passion and emotion, but you always want to lean more towards the passion so you can generate that and use that for yourself rather than the emotion. And it's pretty clear his emotions got the best of him. The unfortunate part is this is not the first time.
Yeah.
And so you don't want to have two locker room incidents attached to your name on two different teams. But I think the emotions got to him. He left. I think he knows it was a bad look, probably regrettable decision. And the only tough spot is how long does that hang with him? Because once you get a reputation in the league, it's really hard to erase it. That kind of sticks with you. That's part of the scouting report. And Houston's a spot that believed in you and is giving you a whole lot of responsibility that is not guaranteed for you in the future. Not that you can't play. but you may not get this role with this type of leadership, this type of runway and freedom. So there's a weight that comes to it. He's got to carry it. I was more disappointed in Christian Wood. He's got to know better by now. That's disappointing to me. So you mentioned he was late for shoot around. I believe if I read correctly, he held up shoot around. You can't do that.
Yeah, you can't do that.
Yeah, that's just not your team. That's the staff. You holding a whole lot of people up. And that's bad enough. But your reaction to that mistake cannot be another mistake. So they could have suspended you for the game right there. It's a DNP or whatever secret suspension they use these days. But they didn't. You just got benched. You can't just not go in the game. Like, you can't hold the whole team up and then decide, yo, I don't want to play. Like, that just sends the whole wrong message. You, Christian Wood, with the year you've had and your status on this team, shouldn't be getting called out by younger players due to your own activity. That's not what you should be doing. So I was disappointed in that because he's played so well, but that's not, you can't be a minus 17 in 8 minutes after you held everyone up.
Yeah, you hold up everyone. So you come off the bench. That's your punishment. So if you just come in and play with some effort, make up for it, that's probably it. But you hold them up, come off the bench, play poorly, get criticized, and then you don't want to come in after that. It's just like my initial thought, like the caveat to give is like, okay, like why were things held up? Why was he feeling this way? Like, you hope everything's okay off the court. But beyond that, you just kind of got to do your job. You got to do it at a high level. And he's been doing that for the most part this season. Like, he's having a good season, but that's not the kind of example you want to set. I do wonder, as like some whispers have popped up over the past couple of weeks about teams calling about Christian Wood, not that the Rockets are shopping him per se, but teams are seeing like, hey, is he untouchable? The answer seems to be no there. Like, I wonder what this kind of incident does for those kind of talks as we get closer to February. You remember, like, Christian Wood did want to come to Houston, but he wanted to come to Houston to play with James Harden. That was a major, James Harden and Stephen Silas for that matter. But like, he really wanted to play with James Harden. And that changed, you know, that dynamic changed almost instantly. And so it does kind of beg the question, like, all right, what is his buy-in level, period? Because this is, you know, quite literally not what he signed up for. And again, that does not excuse what he did, or rather what he didn't do in this game. But like, it does kind of add to this dynamic being a little bit weird, the foundation being a little bit shaky there. So that's going to be something that I'm keeping an eye on, just to see, do those talks pick up? Is this just a one-off for Christian Wood and we don't hear about anything else close again? We'll just have to see. But like, I'm interested in tracking that.
Yeah, I could see frustration just in that entire scenario, that situation. But when you're in the wrong, you just got to kind of admit you're in the wrong and move forward. Because we've seen guys miss shoot arounds and those type of things, get benched and then come back like it's nothing. You had the opportunity, you just got to take it.
Here we go. We will see if he cleans up the act a little bit. While we're kind of on the trade rumor train to a degree, it is apparently Jeremy Grant season. We had a report from James Edwards of The Athletic that he's actually reported that teams with championship aspirations are called about Jeremy Grant. Kevin O'Connor recently wrote a piece suggesting that the Pistons should look to move him. Grant's been linked to the Lakers. That's not something I see, because I'm not sure what the Lakers trade for him. But at any rate, one, do you think the Pistons should move on from Jeremy Grant? And two, if so, like, what are some teams do you think would make sense for him?
I think they could, but I don't think they have to. They could still count him in as the next piece. I don't think they know what their next stage is. Mm-hmm. So what are you going to go get for Jeremy Grant? I think it's clear if they were a little bit better, maybe you make that move in the offseason. But I just don't think they know what's the next step, and he's got to be a part of that process till they at least get another level up. So I would understand if they did it, but I could totally see them being like, you got to make me an offer. I'm not just handing you Jeremy Grant. I don't have to. As far as teams, it's a tough one for me because he has the skill set that fits in with almost everyone. So for me, it becomes more, do I open the trade machine and see the options that actually could happen? Or do I say stupid things onto a microphone? I'm going to opt for number one. But jokes aside, he has that skill set. We saw that in his Denver run. And we saw him grow into a different player last year in Detroit as far as the offense goes. So that's a person that could slide into a whole lot of teams, play multiple positions, defend multiple positions, give you some scoring. So I don't necessarily have one. I know you got one. Well, you probably going to say Boston or something like that.
Did not have Boston on my list. I did have a few. Like, I think the easy one, and one that James mentioned very early on in his piece, Chicago makes a lot of sense. If they feel like they're a move away, like I think, with Patrick Williams headlining that deal as the young shiny prospect for Detroit to take back, Williams plus Filler, maybe that gets you Grant.
Ooh, if you get Jeremy Grant on the low, ooh, that's tough.
Makes Chicago interesting, right?
Lonzo, DeMar, LaVine, Jeremy Grant, and Vooch. You said makes Chicago interesting. That's slander.
That wasn't meant to be slander.
This team's only won eight games in a row.
They are, they have the best record in the East. Like, it wasn't meant as disrespect. I'm just saying, like, that puts them up a level if they can make that kind of move. Well, depending on which version of Jeremy Grant to get on offense, I suppose. But, like one of my major reservations now with Chicago, again, they've proven me wrong to this point of the season. But I do think they could use like a big wing defender. A forward defender, like Patrick Williams was supposed to fill that role for them or grow into that role for them, and he got hurt very early on. So, if you get Jeremy Grant in there, like that, if it doesn't solve that issue, at very least, it mitigates it quite a bit. So I like that fit for them. This was more of a Ben Simmons type deal, but like his name's been floated around in Philly as one of the players on this not seen yet list. That Daryl Morey has of players that he'd be willing to trade for Ben Simmons, like Jeremy Grant and some stuff.
I like Jeremy Grant. I don't think he qualifies for what Daryl's looking for to get back for Ben Simmons. Huh? Like, I don't know if you go through this whole drama just to get Jeremy Grant back. All due respect.
Hashtag all due respect is now becoming the new. We'll save that for a later bit. It's fine. But anyway, Chicago's on the list. Philly was on the list. Phoenix is sneaky for me. Make that the Jay Crowder upgrade. Crowder, Jalen Smith, and something.
Jalen Smith is playing really well right now.
He is. But like, maybe that's something they can throw together. And one team that Kevin O'Connor mentioned in his piece today, like Utah, intrigues me.
Utah would be perfect, but can they get him?
Yeah, that's the thing. They don't have an abundance of first to throw at Detroit. And like, I don't think this version of Joe Ingles and something else probably doesn't get it done. I don't think. So tough for me to see, but like the fit makes sense. Like again, if they need more wing options so they can go small comfortably. And they, they tried to address that over the offseason, adding Rudy Gay. But, if you get Jeremy Grant, that certainly helps.
Oh, yeah, it makes the small ball lineup look a lot different. And he can play the four and fits right in with what you're looking for as far as being able to space, attack off the bounce. Now you have more size to defend different positions. I mean, my guy Bogey can get a break.
I guess that would be the thing. Like, if it's again, I don't think Ingles would be enough. And I don't know if they have no pick. Like, would it be Boyan and stuff? Like, if you're Utah, would you be willing to move Boyan in a deal for Jeremy Grant?
Probably not.
Okay.
He's cooking right now.
That he is. Like, because this is the best offense in basketball. And I don't think, I do think Boyan is a better, at bare minimum, he's a much better shooter than Jeremy Grant is. But I don't think the drop between the two offensively would hurt Utah to a massive degree. And I do think they really need Jeremy Grant's defense. Like, we've joked about it on the pod before that Utah will just throw Boyan on these tough assignments. And they just say, hey, do your best. And we got Rudy on the back line to provide some relief for you. If you could kind of get rid of that problem, you just have Jeremy Grant. I think that makes everyone else's life easier defensively. Like, I think, one, I'm not sure that would be enough for Detroit. But if, you know, if Detroit makes the call, like, hey, we'll give you Jeremy if it's Boyan plus, you know, the Jared Butler in a first or whatever. Like, I probably do that from Utah.
Now, I could see it. Definitely some music could be played there.
You know what? That's the first one of 2022, huh? I'll give it to you. On a positive note, we have Kyrie Irving potentially coming back on Wednesday against Indiana. We have Klay Thompson potentially coming back next Sunday against the Cleveland Cavaliers, because, of course, he's going to come back against Cleveland. Which debut are you most excited for?
Oh, Klay, without a doubt. I love Klay in general, and Klay on a boat is just quality content. But I'd much rather see Klay Thompson on a basketball court and to see him finally get the payoff for overcoming these odds and adversity and get back playing with this group that's humming. That seems fun. So I'm excited to see Klay back on a basketball court. I just want him to be able to stay on a basketball court so we can enjoy what he brings to the table. Because people forget very often, Klay Thompson, one of the most fun people to watch. Like, when he loses his mind, it's quick and swift, and there's three dribbles, and he scored 30 points. So it's going to be Klay for me. Not that I'm not excited for Kyrie to come back. It's just going to be an interesting dynamic. And I wonder if, like, KD and James are going to just take days off on the road.
That would be kind of... No, I didn't think about that one. Because my initial thought was like, okay, cool. Well, let me not lie. Okay, that was not my first reaction. Okay, cool. I wrote about what my reaction was when news dropped that Kyrie was going to be coming back as a part-time player after it was explicitly said that he would not be doing that. But anyway, that's for the article. We're not doing that on the pod. My second reaction when this fight happened, it's like, okay, the big three is going to play on the road. Like, that should help, because KD has been carrying a ridiculous load. James Harden without Kevin Durant has also been carrying a ridiculous load while also trying to work back through some stuff. We talked about that on the pod in terms of conditioning, getting back from the hamstring, the roster construction, all this good stuff. So I was like, all right, the big three. So a little bit of relief to make it through this regular season where everyone's losing bodies to COVID and injury. But man, if Kyrie's playing on the road and they're just like, okay, these are going to be the KD and James Harden rest days. Like, that's actually kind of fun. Oh, man.
And these DMP rests about to stack up. I'm just telling y'all.
That's kind of slick. So if that's the case, like, I wonder just what Kyrie's conditioning is going to be like. Apparently, you know, he said he had been keeping himself busy, you know, playing pickup and things like that while he was away from the team. And once he's brought back into the fray, like, there was an obvious ramp up period that was thwarted by a positive COVID test. So that's a whole thing. So I tell you what, smart to come back against Indiana. They don't have great point of attack defenders. So if you want to get Kyrie in there against a team where he can shake loose a little bit, like, that may be a solid candidate for him. I don't know if excitement's my... is my descriptor here. Like, he's a really good basketball player, so I'm going to enjoy watching him. But the whole situation is kind of fuzzy to me, so I'll just leave that there.
Next level thinking.
There's the second one of 2022. All right, Steve, who's caught your eye?
Bouncing around here for a little bit. First of all, Memphis Grizzlies have won 15 of their last 19 games.
Pretty good.
They were 9-10, I want to say, around Thanksgiving-ish time, and they're now 24-14. and they are rolling right now. And I have enjoyed watching them go on this run. 4 seed, not sure anyone saw that coming. But the fun part has been the defense is finally coming back to a certain level where it's not necessarily perfect scheme-wise, but there is much more activity. So if they get beat, help is coming, and they're helping the helper, and they're recovering and making you really earn points, getting more deflections, forcing more turnovers. That's been positive. Ja Morant has been on a run.
Yes, he has.
It's been insane. The athletic plays jump off the page. This man attacks rims like he doesn't like them. But he's shooting 40% from three. Getting in the paint, third in the league in points in the paint, I think, coming in tonight. That's a really interesting dynamic. And him playing this way, let me clear my throat real quick. I was feeling some pain, sorry. Desmond Main! Him playing at this level, it's really paid off. The whole work that they put into his game has really paid off because he's hurting you on ball. You can also run him off ball. He's defending multiple positions. He just fits really well with them. Jaren Jackson Jr.'s mindset has shifted. The results haven't always been there, but he's definitely been more aggressive as far as posting up. Defensively, he's been more solid. Steven Adams seems like he's got a little bit more juice right now. It's been a fun group to watch play. I did also want to shout out the Bulls. You win 8 straight and you go ahead and take the top of the East. You have my attention.
There you go. Back-to-back game winners from DeMar DeRozan doing his thing.
First player in history to do it on back-to-back nights. A little fun fact for you.
But in now the years is impressive.
Oh, yeah. There you go. I like it. Way to add on. Look at the teamwork. The one thing I've liked is it feels like the fit between not just DeMar and LaVine has been strong, but they're also integrating Vucevic. And now they're using those shots. He's making shots, but they're using them together, which makes it tough. That's why I like to see with Chicago. It's not as take turn, your turn, my turn. No, you have to deal with all of us. You don't know if it's going to be LaVine off a handoff. Now it's a pick and roll, or he's going to hand off with DeRozan. It's another pick and roll. They just use their guys well. And then defensively, it's just such a bend but don't break type deal where, hey, we're going to be solid. We're going to help. This is what we do. And we're going to get your stops and we're going to run the other end and score. Mm-hmm. And we're going to do that more times than we don't. And if it's fourth, you got to deal with us. So it's been a formula that's got them here. So salute to the Bulls. And then it's really fun to watch just Golden State, Phoenix, and Utah play each other. It's not necessarily a specific team, but I just enjoy anytime those three lock up. Western Conference playoffs is going to be fun.
Yeah, it's going to be a freaking bloodbath. Good Lord. I take it you enjoyed the Warriors-Jazz game for over the weekend.
Oh, of course.
Yes.
Goodness gracious. Haymakers. I'll tell you what. What's going to be interesting about this Western Conference is what happens at the bottom. Who gets 6, 7, 8? And can they make things interesting? Who do the Lakers want to play?
Who would the Lakers want to play? There isn't a great answer for that. If you're just looking at the top three seeds, I would favor all three of those teams over the Lakers right now.
I think the Lakers would, I guess, maybe Phoenix, maybe. Or Golden State, maybe.
My initial thought was Utah. They don't have... because even then, if the Lakers is all right, cool, we're going to go small with Bron at the five. Or we're gonna go with a Bron AD front court. Best of luck to you. That's probably their best shot.
They could hopefully switch, muck it up. But Utah's also evolved. Yeah. So I think I'd probably feel worse for Utah if last year hadn't happened. But this year it also seems fine. We'll just drive. and kick, and Donovan Mitchell will do stuff, and we'll figure it out. Like, I know that I don't think they really want to see Memphis. Just the youth. And I don't know if they want to see Phoenix again. But like, even like the Clippers, Clippers are gonna bother someone. They're gonna defense and ISO their way out of the play-in and just be a disgusting six games for somebody. One of these top three teams are gonna be on the ropes if they see the Clippers.
Get Paul George back, and you know what's gonna happen. Like, we're just gonna get Utah, LA again. That's what's gonna happen. Going to catch Paul George shooting like 43% for three over his last eight games to go into the postseason. And Utah's going to lose game one. And the memes are going to fall on Twitter. Like, that's just how it's going to go. Regardless of how the rest of the series goes, that's just what's going to happen. We're going to get like 38 from Paul George, or we're going to get like a 14-point fourth quarter from Reggie Jackson. And it's just going to, everything that Utah's done this regular season is going to go down the toilet. It's like, well, same old Utah, we told you they're frauds, yada, yada, yada. And it's going to be a little funny, but mostly annoying.
Side note, since I'm just riffing right now, is the league a little nervous about this West play-in right now? Like, are they just crossing their fingers the Lakers stay in it? Because right now it's Lakers, Dallas, Minnesota, Sacramento. And I asked the world, what are you going to do with the Minnesota-Sacramento play-in game?
You did.
And immediate sure responses enough were, watch something else.
Oh man, the people aren't getting up for it's fine. Like, I would have fun watching a Wolves Kings matchup, but also that's just me. Like, of course I'm gonna have fun watching the Wolves, or at least the Wolves. The Wolves versus Tyrese Halliburton is what I'm here for. But I just want to see what your face is gonna be like. But yeah, like, as it stands right now, we get LeBron and Luka in 7-8. And then the winner of that gets either Cat and the Crew or De'Aaron Fox and the Crew. Like, oh man, if you get a Dallas win in the first one and then you get Lakers Kings in the second play-in game.
Oh, brother.
Yeah, let's just set up some drama. I think that's what I need in my life. I don't, because that ruins the Minnesota agenda, but you know, that would be pretty funny to me. I think realistically, though, like, the Clippers are probably more likely to slide into the play-in than the Lakers, like, as they get healthier. Because, they're just missing PG right now. He's going to be out for a minute. So, like, that's probably the team that slides. Denver just isn't going to slide. And I think it's safe to believe in Memphis at this point, at least in terms of the regular season. Like, they're too deep, and Ja Morant is ridiculous. He's been insane. He has already made he's already made my all-star team selections look bad. So there's that.
Oh, you don't say.
I'll take that. That's fine. That's my L to hold.
Oh, wow. We're holding the New Year's resolution. Our first L taken by Nikias in Dunker Spot history.
Wait a That seems a little bit dramatic. That's fine. I'll let you have it.
Gotta have the drama. Who you got? What team you got? Who's streaking in the Nikai Analytics world?
I don't know how I feel about that one. One, we're gonna kick things off with Miami, who are, since our last quote unquote regular episode where we do the teams that impress, yada yada yada, they are 7-2. We'll see if that's gonna be 7-3. They are playing Golden State tonight on the second night of a back-to-back. So, I don't even know what the score of that game is right now. I would assume that that's not going great, but I will check that later. But anyway, 7-2. The offense has been really good. The defense has slipped a little bit, but that's understandable considering the players they've had in and out of the lineup. I've just been impressed with the way they've been able to keep this thing together. No team shapeshifts quite like a near-exposed regular season team. Defensively, you know, they had Bam, they were switching a bunch. Bam goes down, it's Dwayne Dedmon at the five. All right, cool. We're just going to trap a bunch of pick and rolls. They lose Dedmon for a bit. Omer Yurtseven is in. We're going to talk about him a little bit later in the week, but he steps in. All right, cool. We're going to show high and we're going to mix in some drop. because we don't want him high all the time. We're going to throw in some zone too. And they just do that. Offensively, oh no, Bam's out. We got a chance to approach a little bit. We're going to go pick and roll heavy. Okay, Jimmy Butler's out too. All right, we're going to push and transition. If not, we're just going to bomb away from three. We're running Max Strus off of screens. We're running Duncan Robinson off of screens. He's finally out of the slump, and now he's out of the lineup again. So, of course, and if those guys go down, all right, cool. Here's Kyle Guy dropping 17 off the bench in his first game with Mike. It is just, I know how they do this, but I don't know how they do this.
Spo's a magician, man.
He's the best coach in basketball.
Tried to tell you, man, there's no better coach at getting the best out of players than Spo. He will get whatever you got and make it work for the team. Like, Kyle Guy immediately came in and had an impact. Like, I knew he was going to do something. I didn't know he was going to do that. Also, as you were speaking, I think the Heat went on a 9-2 run to cut the Golden State lead to three. So it's 40-37 for a live update there.
There we go.
But no, man, that they just always find a way to move and shift and do what they have to do. So a lot of our concerns offensively were, hey, where's the movement? Is this too post-up heavy? Is this too ISO heavy? And then they were forced to a situation where, hey, we can't do that. So like you said, let's pick and roll. Let's throw these threes out. Let's get more movement. Throw guys off more screens. It's worked defensively, hard to prepare for because they can do so many different things. And if one thing's not working, they just move to the next. So it's kind of been them, Spo kind of playing the hits. But these guys, again, are bought in. And to be in a position where all these guys have been down and you're maintaining top four in the East, that's tough. That's tough. That keeps you in a position. And like I said, I thought the positioning was going to be the worst thing for them. But to only be a game out of second, I think two or three games out of first, you give yourself an opportunity to make some noise down the road, and you're separating yourself from the other teams pretty firmly in at least the top six, I would say.
I've just been impressed. I'll ask you a question while we're on the Miami front. How have you felt about Tyler Hero's season this year?
I think Tyler Hero's been good. I think he's just gone out there and made the plays he needs to play. He's playing basketball again. He's been very aggressive, but rarely does it feel forced. So for me to watch him just make the reads, make the right play, and he's hitting shots, which makes it a lot easier. So that combination has made it pretty tough. How do you feel about Tyler Hero's season? I believe you had him as Sixth Man of the Year at one point.
I think at this point of the season, not that there aren't a bunch of great candidates out there, because they are. Like, I think right now he's the front runner. And the only thing that knocks him out of that lead right now is just the fact that he's had to start so many of these recent games because they are missing. Duncan Robinson's out. Max Strus is out. And I don't think they want to just start Kyle Guy off of a 10-day. So, like, Hero has had to fill into the starting lineup. So, like, that's – if we're on a ward watch, like, that's going to be something to watch, just how many starts he's going to end up with. I believe what year? Was it 3-4 years ago when Lou Will won another Sixth Man of the Year? Where I think he had 19 starts that year, 19 to 20 starts. Like, that's probably the line. Like, I wonder if voters are going to be a little bit kinder on that front just because COVID just knocked so many players out for a bunch of games. Like, there's only so much you can do in terms of the rotation. But as far as his actual play, I have been impressed with him holding serve with the type of shots that he's taking. Like, he's living on pull-ups this year. Step back, side steps. His footwork is superb. Let me start there. There aren't many players in the NBA that have better footwork than Tyler Hero. Like, he's able to establish his base and get shots off from a multitude of angles. It's insane to watch his shot prep. But anyway, like, he's winning on pull-ups. The pick and roll reads are still mostly basic, but like, he's nailing those. And so the growth for him now is, okay, and now I'm thrust into the starting lineup. I have to deal with the team's best defender now. What does that look like? And beyond that, okay, now they're trapping a little bit more. And he's shown some comfort driving past hard hedges now, getting rid of the ball a little bit earlier. And he's not trying to reject literally every pick that he sees when he sees so much. Like, that's a development, a welcome one. So it's nice to see that growth. Defensively, like, I don't mind him off ball at this point. Like, he mostly nails the X outs. He mostly nails, like, the help at the nail and stuff when he needs to do that. He remains a good rebounder at the guard spot. On the ball, he can still get picked on. And so as the season progresses and whatever version of healthy this Miami Heat team is going to be once we hit the postseason, like I wonder what that's going to look like at the end of games. Because he has been, you know, for large stretches of the season, like he's been their high usage guy late. A lot of that's because has been because like Jimmy Butler's been out, but also Hero's the jump shooter on this team. And he's looked comfortable against switches. Again, he can get to his pull-up, can get to a step back basically whenever he wants to. And so depending on how well he's knocking down those shots, like I think that's gonna dictate what his playing time's gonna look like late. Because if we saw at the end of the Kings game, they hunted him. And we've seen that in other games this season where it's like, okay, we are just going to put our best ball handler in a situation where Miami's going to switch out Tyler Hero and let's see what he can do. And it hasn't always looked great. So that's going to be something to track. But overall, like this has been a really good season for him. Again, I think he's the sixth man of the year front runner right now. He's probably Miami's best perimeter scorer, which is not a development that I saw in year three for him. And so, like, it's hard not to be impressed with what he's done this year.
Not here. So I'll ask this question. Because I think he's felt a little bit more comfortable in certain situations that caused him issues last year. Do you like the drives? Do you feel that they're more controlled? Is he just converting more? Have you seen anything there?
I think he is a little bit stronger. I think he's absorbing contact a little bit better on drives this year. Just in terms of frequency, he's not getting to the rim as much as he did last year. And I think a lot of that is just the level of difficulty he's facing right now. Again, he's had to face top tier defenders more often now because he's been one. He has the bench, period. But, you know, as of late, again, like Jimmy Butler's been in and out of the lineup. Obviously, Bam's been out a while. He's had to take on, you know, he's seen more of the team's best defender, best perimeter defender. And so, like, that makes it a little bit more difficult for him to get downhill because he's not a bursty guy. He's very good in pick and roll at setting guys up and running them into screens. But beyond that, like, he just doesn't have that kind of explosiveness getting downhill. But when he does get there, there is a little bit more craft. He's finishing through contact a little bit better. I think he's at a career high in terms of field goal percentage at the rim this year. So I do appreciate that comfort. Next step for him, I think, is just more accurate passes as he kicks out. Because I feel like he's making the reads. He's making better reads as he gets downhill. If he feels like a defender from the corners cheating down or whatever, it's just making sure the placement's right. He has had some wild passing turnovers this year. And that's more so just, again, passing accuracy more so than decisions he's making. So if he tightens that up in combination with what he's, you know, the growth he's shown as a driver, like I think he's going to be in a better spot.
No, I agree. I think the hesitation has helped him realize to hesitate and go, which is also helping him not predetermine some of those reads. So he's hesitating, attacking, turning the corner. Even if he's in pick and roll action with Jimmy Butler, you didn't switch. I'm turning the corner, trying to get a layup. It just doesn't feel as forced as, hey, I'm supposed to do this. Mm-hmm. I take two dribbles, the pass is there. You know, it just feels like he's actually just playing basketball, making reads, holding until something develops. So that's been fun to watch. The pull-up is the pull-up, but I think he's been in control, making the plays he needs to make.
Been a good Hero season for it. I just kind of threw out, like, supposed best coach. Is Eric Spoelstra your coach of the year front runner right now, or who would you have right now?
I don't know that he would be my front runner to win the award.
Okay.
He should definitely get consideration. The thing is, it's just going to be tough for anyone that's not
Chicago.
I mean, Billy Donovan's going to take a lot of the "I didn't think y'all were going to be that good" type stuff. And then it becomes Golden State and Phoenix still exist. So now Taylor Jenkins comes. If Memphis keeps its going, it's a numbers game. So it's like Spo probably feels like he's going to battle for attention with what? Quinn Snyder, Coach Michael Malone, J.B. Bickerstaff.
Yeah, it's a deep class this year.
Now, there's been some coaching that's been going on this season. There's been some coaching that's been going on. So for me, I think Spo's done a hell of a job. He deserves consideration. It's just, it's going to be tough for him to get the numbers.
Okay. That's fair. That's fair. A genuine Nets fair before we before I catch more slander on Twitter. So I do have a second team that I want to briefly touch on. But first, I have a have a number and a question for you. Among pick and roll fancy stat from our friends at Second Spectrum. Among pick and roll combos that have hooked up at least 100 times this season, do you know who the most efficient pick and roll pairing in the NBA is this year?
LaMelo Ball, Mason Plumlee.
It is not.
Oh. Do I get a second shot at the line?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, now I got to consider who I'm speaking with. This is going to bother me. I can already tell. It's going to be some like Orlando Magic duo that I hadn't thought of. Or like some Pelicans madness. Is Josh Giddey involved in this stat?
Josh Giddey is not involved in this stat.
All right. I think I'm going to have to take my L. Okay. I don't know.
At north of 1.2 points per possession, the Shai Gilgeous-Alexander and Mike Muscala pick and roll is doing the darn thing. And that brings me to the 5-5 in their last 10 Oklahoma City Thunder. Go on. What's up?
Oh, I'm all ears.
You you already look sick. This is great. But no, I want to give a quick shout to the Thunder, who have defended well, who have not scored particularly well, because this team desperately needs some shooting across the roster. There are only a couple of guys that are doing it at a decent level right now. One of which is Mike Muscala, who has had an under-the-radar solid season for them. Kenrich Williams is shooting well from three. Just want to throw out some... Why did you do this every time I get ready to give Kenrich Williams some love? What's the beef? What's going on?
My throat's just dry. I got to get some water. Sorry.
Oh, okay. All right. Just wanted to check. But in all seriousness, like, I've been impressed with the defense, what Lu Dort does. I would like for Shai to be better, but he has been a little bit more engaged as of late, so I've appreciated that. I appreciate the mobility that OKC has in the front line. So that has been fun. We touched on Shai a little bit during the All-Star episode, and I was just like, I don't know if I can get there with All-Star for him. And so, like, I'm still not at the point where I would want him on my team this season, but I have watched a lot of Thunder film over the weekend. And I don't want to get into like hyperbole, but like there is just not a driver in the NBA like Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, like stylistically. There's nobody in the league that wins quite the way that he does. With the handle, the way he decelerates, the angles that he takes, how low he gets on drives, like it's stark to watch him win on drives. I posted a steal shot on Twitter a little bit earlier tonight. We're recording on a Monday night of this possession against the New Orleans Pelicans where he gets Jackson Hayes on a switch. And the point that I captured was him nearly on the ground as he's driving to the basket. If I captured this, like, he got a bucket on this possession because somehow he lifts up from this position and gets a scoop under the arms of Jackson Hayes for a layup. And I'm just like, how on earth are your shins that flexible to where you can get that low and maintain balance and still get the shot off cleanly? It's insane what he's able to do as a driver. As much as the shooting has dipped, it's probably safe to say last season's shooting exhibition was a bit of an outlier for him. So the shot has not rebounded this season, but it's still stark to watch just how easily he draws extra attention defensively. One, because he's just that good offensively, but also, he just touches the paint so consistently. He's averaging 27-5-5 over this recent stretch for OKC without shooting well from three. 8 free throw attempts a game, 65% at the rim on 7 attempts. And, like, he just spooks defenses. Like, there was a play against the Kings where not even a set play, just dribbles the ball up the right side of the floor against De'Aaron Fox, just hesitates and goes. Drives, gets inside leverage, and then just stops on an absolute dime with a behind-the-back dribble and he has two defenders on, and there's a kick out for a wide open three. And it's just like, he just makes this look so easy. The way that he's able to kind of create out of thin air, like, it's incredible to watch him orchestrate an offense. I really want the jumper to come for him consistently, because if it does, I don't know what you do with it. And to that point, like, I do think, while the shot hasn't come, I have enjoyed just how much I feel like the processing's got a little bit better for him. He's making decisions a little bit quicker as a passer. That's part of why the pick and roll with him and Mike Muscala works. If it's just a traditional pick and pop, if he draws two, it's a quick slip, over the head pass, behind the back pass. If it's a roll, it's a quick pocket pass. If it's a ghost screen, it's a quick dart to him. Like, he's not making super advanced reads still, but the basic ones, he's making them quicker. And so once you do get him in action with an actual shooting big like Mike Muscala, like, there's only, he's able to manipulate that and get open looks for everyone. So I've been impressed with what he's doing offensively. Again, Lu Dort defending well. Still like the minutes I'm seeing from JRE. Shout out Aaron Wiggins, who has popped as of late. This is probably just my nerdy thing, but like, I've enjoyed watching the Thunder as of late.
Go off, man. I like it. It's what we're here for.
This is what we're here for.
This is why we exist. We talk about the Thunder. They're hanging around. They're not a bad team to watch.
This is the growth that I needed. This is all I needed. I've won the season of the dunker spot. That's all I needed right there.
It's a new year. If you can't enjoy watching Lu Dort just crash into things consistently, or really great ball movement, now the only question is, I need someone else to show up offensively. Because it's just Shai, Lu Dort, and Giddey. And on those nights when Giddey doesn't have it, it's just Shai and Lu Dort.
And Lu Dort has not shot well from three, I'll put it that way, over the past few weeks.
He's getting them up, though.
That he does.
7.6 attempts a game. Well, who else is going to put him up?
Well, when you put it, you put it that way. Ty Jerome, I guess, coming up to me. But I'd like to see more Trey Mann.
Oh, there we go. Finally. Got him on the man train. Yep, he's seen him.
We're getting there. We're getting there. Like, I hadn't seen much of him when you first brought him up on the pod. Like, I'm seeing division.
He is everything that Redacted was supposed to be.
Okay, we ain't got to do this. I will say it did kind of make me sad. I was watching the end of Thunder Mavericks. Oh, gosh. Watching Teo Maledon get these hit-ahead passes, and he drives and he gets a paint touch and he doesn't even look at the rim. I'm just like, brother, try. Draw some fouls. Like, just try. It's okay to shoot. And this was a game without Shai, so like, it was literally just Josh Giddey and everyone else trying to fill gaps. And I just want Tail to put the shot tendency up, man. It doesn't have to be 85, but like, go from 15 to like 45 on the shot tendency. We're going 2K scale. Like, just get to 45. Cool.
Staying at 30, buddy.
That's all I need from him. If you just bump it up. And God bless Poku. That is my lone Poku contribution right now. He's doing his best. You're getting too much enjoyment out of this.
Nah, we're good. I don't want you to repart the young Thunder.
Okay. Well, let's move off the Thunder. I see you're getting mischievous. My team that makes me go, the Dallas Mavericks.
I have a quick question before you go forward.
Okay.
Because I got a text from a dunker asked me, is this segment just so Nekias can get mad at Boston and Dallas? I didn't have a solid answer, so I figured I'd ask.
Wow. Well, no, it's not. And like, I don't even have like, quote unquote, slander for Dallas. It's more so just, I just want to see what the incorporation of Luka Doncic back into the offense is going to look like. That plus, is Tim Hardaway Jr. going to knock down shots again?
It's probably going to look like what it looked like before Luka went down, and Tim Hardaway Jr. maybe, but he's going to try.
So that's kind of what I want to see, because Jalen Brunson is popping. And so I wonder if he, because he replaced THJ in the starting lineup. So I wonder, like, what happens there? Do they just keep Jalen in there? If they do keep Jalen in there, like, what is that dynamic going to look like? Do you keep the ball in his hand because he's a darn good pick and roll player? He's a darn good player, period, but he's really good in pick and roll. If they do keep that usage up and keep him aggressive, take pressure off of Luka, what is Luka going to look like off the ball? Is he going to commit to cutting? Is he going to relocate around the perimeter? Or is he going to do the stand at the hash thing because it's not my position to run something? If it's the latter, we may have some issues. Because Luka standing 28 feet from the basket doesn't hold a ton of weight. And if the Brunson pick and roll doesn't work and it just devolves into a Kristaps Porzingis mid-post possession, that's going to be some funky looking offense. And that's no disrespect to Kristaps, who has actually been pretty good this season. He deserves his credit. Like, he's actually been pretty efficient in the post this year. But just in terms of the process and making the defense react and bending the defense and forcing them into bad decisions, like, that's not going to work consistently, I don't think, if there isn't some incorporation of off-ball movement. So that's kind of where I'm at with Dallas. Like, I just want to see what this is going to look like.
And they actually transfer the good things that they did with Luka back in, pretty much.
Yeah, without, like, just balancing the two. Because, like, even without Luka, like, it wasn't like Dallas was world beating. I think they were 500 without. But, like, can they incorporate, you know, the juice that Jalen gave them as a ball handler? Keep Kristaps involved? And also, obviously, you want Luka running the show because he's Luka Doncic. He's really freaking good. So, like, if they can blend all of those elements together.
Well, here's a question. Does it help them more to at least have something else in their back pocket so the non-Luka minutes have a chance to actually give you something?
Yeah.
I'll just spitball on that one. So hopefully you bring Luka back. You have that. Now you take what you've been doing and you have some guys playing with more confidence. So you can mix and match. It's just the big question is for me, can they continue to get KP going at the same time that Luka goes? Like, can they exist? Not coexist. I'm not going to say that, but it'd be nice if they could get all those cards in a row.
Well, that was my Dallas thought. Like, I just want to see what that incorporation is going to look like. Who's on your list for the evening?
The Blazers defense.
Ew.
So they gave up 132 to Dallas, 120 to Utah, 139 to the Los Angeles Lakers on Friday. I watched some of that game. Giving up 65 to Atlanta tonight in the first half. I am here. It's 2022, and accountability is important. You have to be able to admit when you were wrong. And I was excited about Portland's defense. Thought they had done a lot of good things. They had more things in the bag. Hey, we're showing at the level. We can play drop. We can trap. We can play zone. We have some schemes we can go to. We're trying more things. Hey, the help defense is there. The activity is there. That'll help us down the line. So I watched this Laker game. Mm-hmm. Some of these breakdowns. So some of the issues that Portland had defensively. Some games, they were scheme related where, hey, they're just getting exploited because they're at the level. It's a role. Teams are playing out of it. Or, hey, the scheme's really good, but now they're kicking, getting beat off the dribble, forcing help, that kind of thing. Kind of a weird, like, back and forth. I got to take an L. Think I was wrong, guys. Some of these breakdowns are just off, like, post-up passes. Like, pass to the post. Tony Snell's facing the wrong way. Cutter goes backdoor layup. LeBron's dribbling towards the paint. Larry Nance Jr. helps kick the three. And I'm like, what's happening? Switch, but I'm just going to point. And you hopefully will get there. I'm going to stay with my guy. Oh, you didn't. It's a layup. I've been disappointed by the fight there. And you can't go backwards defensively from where you were and kind of go backwards offensively in a sense. Now, they've had injuries. Dame's been in and out. CJ's been out. So I'll shoot them some bail there. But I thought there'd be a little bit more there. And it's been weird because you got the Anthony Simons year, right?
Mm-hmm.
You got the Nasir Little year.
Mm-hmm.
Norman Powell's still doing stuff, but You're still trying to figure out how to use Larry Nance Jr. Robert Covington is suddenly just benched.
Yeah, I was just about to say he got benched. So
Ben McLemore comes in and does stuff randomly. I don't know. Nurkic seems the same. This point, I had high expectations for this team.
Yeah. One is a brief thing because we talked about him on the last pod, or you talked about him on the last pod. Portland did give up 65 in this first half against Atlanta. Atlanta gave up 70. And Portland is without Dame and CJ right now. So I'm probably just as concerned about Atlanta's at a certain point, bro. It's got to be pride at a certain point.
I was going to let the Hawks slide for a little bit.
Shout out to Trey for having 29-9 at the half. I'm box score watching right now. I've not watched this game yet. But Trey has 29-9 at the half, and they're down 5. Like, that says that Norm Powell was 17, Anthony Simons was 17, the Steel Lobo has 14. They have to be bombing away from three, right? Yeah, 12 to 24 for three in the first half for Portland.
Yeah, I'd just like to see a little bit more fight from the Blazers on that end, and then we can – I'll hype them back up. I still believe somewhere in there.
They just got to get healthy and figure out the rotation and also make some alterations to the roster and also some coaching improvement and also some
– wow.
It's funny. Other than that, Mrs. Lincoln, how was the play?
You're still beloved in Portland. That's my favorite part. Destroying them for a year and a half straight.
Anyways, I just want them to be better on defense. That's literally it.
Let's also, it's 2022. Let's get my contractually obligated Lakers thoughts out of the way.
Woo.
Keep me off the radar for at least 2 months.
Okay.
So here's a couple of things I've noticed, right? One, LeBron and Melo as fives, kind of working. Like, LeBron gets to either sit on the weak side and guard a big or be in drop, which is just a funny visual, but also means he doesn't have to do other things. So that's a thumb up there. And Carmelo Anthony, very sneakily, pretty versatile in pick and roll as a five. He has his weaknesses, but you put him in drop at the level, switching, a little trap, doing his job, man. Do his job. I was waiting for the good for him, but it's fine.
I'm not taking the bait. Go ahead.
The other thing the Lakers feels like they've been doing is they're using LeBron more of a hub, using him as more of a hub. So they'll throw it to him in the post and actually try to get like some splits and some movement. It doesn't look great, but they're trying. And they're also throwing it to him at the elbow and get some movement out of that. So they're trying to get more movement in the half court offense. I also like LeBron screening for Russell Westbrook. That's fun. He can stand right at the elbow, make that under a little tougher. Mm-hmm. Really nice wrinkle when he just flips to like a flat angle and Russ can go either way. They should bookmark that one. The real subplot here is the Lakers don't have a guard to screen with LeBron James. This is something I've noticed over the last week. That's kind of the secret sauce. If you have that, it's a whole lot of things you can do. And right now, the Lakers haven't been able to figure it out. I'd say the best one's probably Wayne, but Wayne's sitting for a little bit. It should be Malik Monk. But unfortunately, Malik Monk has not mastered the little things to screen with LeBron. And like, it feels like he's either always trying to flip the angle at the last second, which is okay, but also doesn't really work, takes away the show. Or he'll pop to a side with multiple guys, or he'll hold to the screen too long when he needs to just take two steps and slip. So it hasn't quite worked out yet. And you could tell LeBron wants it to because he keeps telling him to come up there, and it just hadn't worked out. Avery Bradley has all the nuance down. He's got all the little things you want. The problem is the defense is totally fine with whatever he does after he sets the screen. I don't think Talen Horton-Tucker is allowed to screen for LeBron right now. And then we got to see Russ actually screen for LeBron. Now, you have been clamoring for this, right?
That I have, yeah.
Now, here's the problem with Russ screening for LeBron right now. Russ's only threat is the roll, which is fine. It's a great threat. Mm-hmm. But defenses don't have to show for very long. So basically, you can turn into an under. So where I'm here, LeBron, but I'm also leaving immediately with Russ, and you're still in the same spot. So that's been interesting to watch. I'm concerned. The Lakers need to find a guard to make this work because that's a mismatch heaven for the Lakers to lean on. And they haven't had it. So something I'm watching there. Throw out a little nerd out with me
on
pick and roll screening.
This is also why we have the dunker spot. It's literally what it's here for. Can I ask a Russ screen for LeBron question?
Yes.
How much of their issues, from what you've seen, how much are your issues are based on where the screens are being set? Because what just me eyeballing it, it seems like when they do go to Russ screen for LeBron, like they're typically lower on the floor. Like, is there room for that to be bumped up some, or does that kind of go into like the rest of the personnel? Like what are you seeing there in terms of like the actual placement of the screen?
Well, I've seen the high middle pick and roll of late, and that's where I'd noticed that teams literally were just like, I'm going to show very quickly and then get out. The idea is you want to try and drag that show out because, hey, this is a guy we don't want to switch on to LeBron. And we're also worried about whatever this person is doing, whether it's popping or rolling. But it's not like LeBron is the fastest. So he's really just there to kind of drag you out and pick you apart and read you. Mm-hmm. So it's more so, I think if you set it higher, you could have a chance, like kind of like a step up, maybe in transition. That might open things up, try and get the defense on the run a little bit. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of times it's been static. And even when they set it higher, it's kind of in the middle of the floor, so you can kind of dance a little bit defensively. So I think going to it maybe with more movement or higher on the floor, they could do like low corner. I just don't necessarily know if I like the role for Westbrook there just because of the help that may come. So they could mess around with it, but that was something that jumped off to where I think I get why they're not leaning on it as much.
Okay. Just wanted to pick your brain as the resident coach on the podcast.
In like 7 seasons, man. Hashtag is big laundry, folks. Oh.
Boo. Boo. I am not allowed. I am the only person that could dig into self-deprecation on this podcast. Thank you, good sir. Wow.
got 34 years of that.
All right. Who are some players that have caught your eye as of late, good sir?
Ja Morant.
Ah, I see. Now, seems to be good at basketball.
I spoiled my stat by saying Ja Morant's name because I do that a lot. But there are 5 players in the league that are averaging 24 points, 5 plus rebounds, 6 assists. Ja is one of them. Can you name the other 4?
Let's go for it. Is there a games played minimum here that we're working with, or is just...
I didn't go that far digging.
Oh, okay.
Just wrote it down. It was cool.
So 24, 5, and 6, that's the threshold? Do I have that right?
Yes.
Okay. Well, all right. Luka certainly won.
That is correct.
LeBron is going to be 1.
Also correct. Dude, you're on a hot streak. This might be the best we've seen from the guys.
24, 5, and 6 assists, right? Okay, that takes Giannis out. Booker's not at 6 assists. DeRozan is 1.
No, these 2 are a lot easier than you're making them.
Huh. Now it's going to make me feel worse. Okay. I don't, KD's not going to have the assists. I don't think James Harden has the scoring.
There's someone.
Oh, Jokic, there. Wait a minute.
I was about to say, there's someone in their car yelling at you right now.
Yeah, okay. So there's Jokic, and now there's 1 more, right? I don't think he's scoring enough, though. Where's Jimmy Butler?
No, not Jimmy Butler.
Okay.
Tap out?
No, because like I feel like this is going to be so obvious I was going to be upset if I don't have it. 24-5-6.
The hashtag is Big Mad, folks.
Oh, I don't like this. Let me pull up a list of teams. Let me see if something pops for me. Because Harden hadn't scored enough. Like, I don't think that's going to be the answer.
This was one of the automatic ones. You already said Luka, LeBron, and Jokic, right?
Yes.
Yeah, I thought this one would be off the table by now. It's Steph Curry.
Oh, wow. Okay. Well, yeah, that. Okay.
It's
yeah,
all right.
I guess the rebounding was kind of throws me off on that. But that's fair.
Nothing's worse than when you didn't know who said both teams played hard.
Look, man, I blanked on it, okay? We don't have to do this.
Back to Ja. He scored 30 in 4 straight games. He's just insane right now as far as getting in the paint, attacking, pick and roll, keep you behind, then explode and finish. The hesitations, the finishing, the dunks, the three-point shot, sticking. He's the first Grizzly to have a 40-point and 10-rebound game, and he's the first Grizzly to have a 40-point and 10-assist game. And he did them both this year against the Lakers.
That's kind of tough.
So salute to Ja right there. DeMar DeRozan, 20-plus points in 13 straight games, leads the league in fourth quarter scoring. This guy has been insane. Like, he has just mastered what he does well. I think really that San Antonio stint helped him in the sense that he had to grow as a playmaker. And now he can kind of slide right into the Chicago role where he can take that and also add what he does scoring-wise. And he's just picking his spot. It doesn't matter what you do, where you're at. He's picking his spot. Once he gets there, you have to deal with whatever he does. He's been doing it night in, night out. He's been incredible. Speaking of incredible, Joel Embiid.
Yes.
I think he has 30 or more points in 5 of his last 6. I think he has 30 points in 10 boards in 4 of his last 6, if I'm good at math. But he's been insane of late. And I feel like it's not jumping off the screen like it did last year for some reason. But the shots that he's making at that size, low clock, late clock, face up, pull up, jab, double team, I'm going to dribble away from it and just take a step back. Like, just on a nightly basis. He's been insane.
And passing's better too.
The trolling has returned. And yes, the patience in the passing has been better as well. Like, he's actually, well, there's not a lot of movement off his post-ups, but that's a different pod. He's improving in that area. I'm going to go with Marcus Morris Sr. just to prepare you for the inevitable pull-up pod.
I like it.
And I like that the Clippers have gotten to the point where they run elbow just to get the Marcus Morris ISO. Like, that's the point of the play. Right, we're going to disguise this, hit it at the elbow, and now you do the thing. And he's doing it. I like that. Hamidou Diallo?
I like that. Thank you.
Back-to-back 30-point, 10-rebound games. Give it up for Hamidou. I had a pun, but I forgot it. And then you say Tyler Herro is your sixth man of the year candidate, right?
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to throw a different one at you.
Okay, who you got?
Well, I'm going to ask a question first. There are 4 players in the NBA who average, coming in tonight, 40% shooting from 3 and 7 or more rebounds. Can you name them?
Ooh, 7 boards and shooting 40% or better from 3. This is a very particular list. I would assume Cat is one.
Cat is one. I would hope so, since he called himself the greatest big man shooter since George Mikan.
All right, let's pull up the standings again. Let me just make sure. Let's see who are some stretch adjacent. Is Miles Turner at 40%?
No.
Okay.
Miles Turner does not appear on this list.
Okay. So, I think volume / shot difficulty is going to take him out. Kevin Durant isn't there, right?
No KD. Oh,
okay. 7 rebounds, 40% from 3. This is going to bother me, I feel like. John Collins, is he one?
Yes, John Collins is on there.
There we go. Shout out to all-star adjacent John Collins. who else would be on this list? Actually, what is Jokic shooting from three this year?
Joker is not on this list. That's a good question, though.
I wonder where. Okay.
35% from three.
Oh, okay. All right. He's dropped in. Okay. Fair enough. Well, let's see. Muscala's not going to have rebounds. Where's Kevin Love?
Kevin Love is on this list. Do you tap out on the fourth?
Let's see. Jaren's not at 40%, I don't think.
Nah, it's Bobby Portis.
Oh, that's a good one. That's a really good, that's a good query right there.
Here we go right there. And I wanted to bring up Kevin Love. That's my sneaky pick for sixth man of the year. If he still qualifies by that time. But still, 20-plus in five straight games. In the last five, he's averaging 25, eight boards, two assists on 51% shooting from the field, 52% from three. Jeez. Man's back. Kevin Love loving it. So good to see him back playing basketball, enjoying, having success. And, you know, there are some people who thought he was washed, dried, and folded. And guy can't write off these veteran big men.
I see. Is that the list?
Yeah, that's all I had.
Okay. Well, I'm going to stay on brand. We're going to kick this off with Rudy Gobert. Just casually averaging 16 and 15 this year. Still the best drop defender in basketball. And also, the Jazz are giving up virtually nothing when Rudy Gobert switches this year, which is fun. Again, just playing around with some numbers. Rudy Gobert apparently switched 34 screens last year. He's up to 33 already. Utah's doing some more experimentation, playing him higher. We are seeing more switches, and he is stout. Like, I think Draymond Green is my defense player of the year right now, but I would just say don't sleep on Rudy. He's been very good. I know how you feel about him in a postseason setting. We will, you know, we'll cross that bridge when we come to it. But
it doesn't matter how I feel about Rudy Gobert. It's how the guys with the basketball feel about Rudy Gobert. I'm just gonna leave it there.
Oh, okay. I would just say I think we broached the Anthony Edwards thing. Like, he's flat out said that, you know, Rudy Gobert does not put fear in his heart on a night that he shot, I think, 1 of 5 at the rim against Rudy. So it's just like, even when he does well, they don't care. Which, I mean, as long as they don't do well, I guess it doesn't really doesn't matter. But anyway, Rudy's been great defensively. Basically 71% from the field. He's still flirting with 7 free throw attempts a game. Again, if he can punish guys inside, get to the line, clean the offensive glass, like, that's kind of all I need him to do. We broached this on a recent pod. Like, it would be nice to hit him more on some deep seals. Sometimes on purpose. Maybe once every 3 quarters instead of once every 6. But he's doing his thing. I think he deserves some love. Beyond that, Pascal Siakam. Did you know that Pascal is averaging 28 and 4 this year?
I did not.
Like, he... But understandably, a slow start coming off the long layoff. But since then, he's still getting to the rim, getting more comfortable with the pull-up. The passing has improved. Defensively, he's still switching all over the place. He looks good. He looks legitimately good. 24, 13, and 7 over his last 3. I just keep an eye on Toronto moving forward. I'll leave it there. Want to shout out Gary Harris, who is averaging almost 19 points a game over his last 8 heading into the night, shooting 40% from 3 on nearly 6 attempts. Nice to see him knocking down shots again. Has some juice as a driver again. I'm here for Reclamation Project Gary Harris. Like, Orlando isn't very good. There are some fun things to track in Orlando. We'll touch on one of those later in the week, but I've enjoyed Gary Harris looking more like the Denver version of himself, the early Denver version of himself, not this one, you know, not the side that eventually got him traded. But that's been cool. Caris LeVert, has not played yet in 2022 because it's in COVID protocols, but 22-5 in December. I brought up a pick and roll stat a little bit earlier in the pod, but in the month of December, the most efficient pick and roll pairing in the NBA was Caris LeVert and Miles Turner. Basically 1.4 points per possession when those two hooked the four ball screen. And it makes sense. Pop threat with Miles Turner, Caris LeVert, very herky-jerky driver, gets downhill, gets to his spots. Can't really switch that at this point. It's been fun watching LeVert and Turner, especially when they see ice coverage. It's been fun to see that because Caris likes to reject picks anyway. And so, like, it's fun to watch defense scramble out of that because if you don't send extra help, Caris is getting downhill. And if you do, you got Miles Turner on the pop. And it's just it's just tough sledding for defenses. So hopefully he can get back healthy, stay healthy, and he continues this role because the beginning of the season for Caris LeVert, we talked about it with Caitlin Cooper when we had the episode with her. It was not great early in the year for Caris. So nice to see him pick up his play. Last guy on my list is Jalen Smith. Teased him a little bit at the top of the pod. 16-10 over his last four. It started the last two games. Really started getting regular rotation minutes over the last four because DeAndre Ayton has been out. It's been a bit of a mixed bag for me. One, I do like the athleticism. Like, I do like how fearless he is. You give him any sort of a load up, he's not scared of who's under the rim. I think you saw the highlight with him dunking all over Mason Plumlee. If he has a runway, he's jumping off too. He can get up with anybody. I want to see what it looks like in close quarters. He does have good hands, but I just want to see what that looks like moving forward. Him and Chris Paul trying to develop some chemistry and pick and roll. Jalen has to hold the screens. That's really my big nitpick for him right now offensively. He's very much running up to set the screen. He's just releasing way too early. He wants to get the ball, which typical young big man stuff, but be nice to see him hold contact there. Defensively, I'm intrigued. In drop, it's a little bit of a mess. I'm getting like Moses Brown vibes from last year where he's just dropping too deep and not really doing much, just kind of inviting the ball handler into him. And at that point, like, they're getting ahead of steam. Some interesting switching flashes for him, though. He does seem like he moves his feet pretty well. Not an all-star by any stretch, but looking at the Suns Thunder game from the other night, he got Ty Jerome on an island multiple times. Ty Jerome could not do anything with him. So it's nice to see he can move laterally a little bit. Like, I want to see what that looks like with a larger sample. But I'm intrigued. Like, one, it's just good that Jalen Smith is doing things, period. Because once he was drafted, there were questions about why Phoenix made the pick that they did. And then he had the rookie season that he did where he missed most of it. And it's like, okay, what does this look like? In the offseason, it's like, okay, cool. Like, which veteran is he going to get traded for to fill out the Suns roster? And he got an opportunity now, and he's playing well. So hopefully he's able to build on that. If Phoenix does have something in Jalen Smith, like, that front court becomes a lot more interesting. You're going to have Ayton. JaVale McGee's played well. You're going to have Smith in the rotation. Like, they've gotten stuff out of Frank Kaminsky at points this season. Like, it's going to be good. It's good for Phoenix to have options. And so kudos to Jalen Smith.
Okay. I like it. It's good to see him actually play, like,
yeah,
and be ready to contribute.
I'm here for it. I love that I've become, like, I'm just the screening truther on this podcast now. Not the development I expected. Screen navigation and also just screening in general.
That's all right. It's almost playoffs. You'll be talking about rim pressure again.
It's important. I'm not going to be slandered for rim pressure. That's what the podcast is for. I doled that out.
How do you think the Denzel Valentine feels right now?
Probably not great.
Well, didn't he get announced to be traded? And it was immediately like, yeah, Lakers are going to waive him. And then it was like, the Knicks are going to make it a three-team trade.
But then they're going to waive him. It is just like, well, I love that. I can't remember if it was Woj or Shams that tweeted it, where it's like, the Knicks are going to waive him. Now he's free to find somewhere. I was like, what are you, like you're doing him a favor.
You're trying to do him a solid. The second time, that's got to be disrespect. Like, a whole other team like, came in to do the same thing. Nah, I'm upset.
Like, I mean, I hope he's able to latch on somewhere. Like, I do think there's an intriguing wing in there somewhere. Somewhere. But I don't know, man. That's about as nice as I can be about it. He can shoot. When he decides to shoot, is kind of a
An
adventure sometimes. But
all right. Shout out to Denzel.
There we go.
Are you ready for the Andrew Wiggins All-Star noise to ramp up here? You ready? Ready for that?
I feel like I'm in a box with this. Because, like, in a perfect world, I would like to disagree without it coming off like I just hate Andrew Wiggins or something, because I don't. I just feel like I think it's fair to acknowledge Andrew Wiggins has been good on both ends of the floor this year and has been an important piece to Golden State being an elite team, while also saying I don't know if he's been all-star good. Like, I think there's space for both of those things.
So what are you going to do when Andrew Wiggins and Anthony Davis knock out DeAndre Ayton from the All-Star game?
I'm going to rant about it on this year's podcast. You know, I'm going to be yelling into, I don't want to say a void, because we do have a lot of loyal listeners, but like, it's not like me ranting about it's going to change the decision. But I will say I'll disagree with that. I think Ayton's been better than both.
Are you prepared to headline both the Garland and FVV All-Star only for them neither to make it?
That's really going to be the fun thing. Like, neither one of those guys going to make it. It's going to be like LaMelo and Tatum's going to be a guard.
I can't wait till somehow it's Drew and Chris Middleton replacing those two. Then what are you going to do, buddy?
Tip my hat to, you know, Drew Holiday for having a great season, and Chris Middleton continuing to build his resume. He is a champion. You know, this is a second round pick who has turned himself into an all-star wing and champion and a late game option for a finals team. You know, it's just an incredible story. So, you know, if he makes it.
Stanley Johnson was hooping.
I meant to ask you about that during the Lakers section. How did you feel about Stanley Johnson?
I liked him. That man, he had some juice. He was active. Helped multiple lineups. Good size. Did he get caught up in semantics? Like, did his first 10-day count? I shouldn't be ignorant on this platform, but I honestly don't remember. Because I was like, why are they not signing him? But I guess they got to keep him at some point.
Yeah, they probably did. They need to bring him. Like, yeah, I do think.
They do need to. I mean, it was playing. How bad do you feel for some of these players who are like having good opportunity and playing well, but also it's legitimately a numbers game? So like now six players come out of protocols and it's thanks.
Like, I guess that's kind of what I'm tracking to a lesser extent. Like, that's going to be the Miami problem whenever they get their version of healthy. Because, like, it's been, like, like Caleb Martin's been fun, and Omer Yurtseven has been fun. You get the random thing from Kyle Guy, Gabe Vincent, all this stuff. And, like, at some point, Bam's going to be back. Victor Oladipo's going to be back. You know, P.J. Tucker just came back and just got an update. Apparently, Jimmy Butler got hurt this game, so I wonder what that's going to be.
Yeah, he is hobbling off. Oh, boy. Ah.
Well, I guess that just puts a pin in that thought then, doesn't it? Team's just never going to be healthy. Well, I guess we'll see what that Jimmy Butler injury is. That's unfortunate because he's been a top 10 player when he's been healthy. And the issue is that he just can't put five games in a row together this season.
Oh, no, nah, man. I don't like seeing Jimmy Butler get helped off the floor.
Like, what? like, was it did he land on someone's foot, or like, I'm trying to see if someone's posted a clip on Twitter right now.
But it was a face up drive, took two dribbles. I don't know if his right foot went out from under him, but yeah.
Oh, that doesn't sound good at all. Okay. Yeah.
Didn't look great. Prayers to Jimmy Butler. No good.
Well, hopefully that's nothing serious. But... well, more Tyler Hero on ball usage. More Kyle Lowry on ball usage.
Side note, Atlanta Hawks, Portland, 103-100 at the end of three quarters.
Ah, oh, man. I can hear former players yelling at clouds right now. Where's the defense?
Is Draymond Green for MVP going to bother you like Chris Paul for MVP?
Yes, because let's not do this.
Do what?
Give Draymond Defense Player of the Year. Give him an All-NBA selection. Like, we don't have to do that.
But his value.
He is valuable.
Some could say he's the most.
I do not think he's a more valuable player than Stephen Curry. I'm going to be honest.
But you won't tell him that.
The better rebuttal is that he's not gonna know. He doesn't care if I say anything.
It's kind of on brand for Draymond to just.
Well, it probably makes it more likely that I get a response because I am a nobody. Which, you know what, fair. Like, you know, when you're a basketball genius, like you gotta have license and be like, hey, your opinion doesn't matter compared to mine. I can do your job better than yours, and I can play in the NBA. So I'll give him that. But no, I don't think he should get MVP buzz. Where's DeMar DeRozan on your MVP ballot?
He's in that five spot for me right now. I have a hard time with five right now. I got my four. They don't move. Mm. But you got DeMar playing like this. You got LeBron playing the way he is. But I know you don't want to talk about that.
I don't.
You got the man's the oldest NBA player in history to score 30 plus in seven straight games. Give the man his flowers.
That's legitimately great. Put him on the All NBA team. Like, I'm not doing LeBron MVP talk right now. I'm sorry.
Yeah, but LeBron's playing well. Donovan Mitchell, Devin Booker. I got at least eight guys. Ja. So no LeBron for you. Where do you have DeMar? 10, 12?
Come on. I'm not about to be dubbed as the DeMar hater on this podcast. No, like I have between 5 and 7. I fluctuate depending on the day. Like, with this kind of stretch, it's hard not to have him 5. Because he has been phenomenal offensively. He has not killed Chicago defensively, which honestly, like, that's a win. Hey, bro, on the weak side, just peel in early and then close out. Don't get beat. Don't foul. It's literally all we need you to do. And he's done that. Offensively, the playmaking's there. The scoring is there, particularly late. Didn't really broach in the Chicago thing, but like, also shout out to Zach LaVine, who has been insane over the last week or so. It's not really fair for those two to be on fire at the same time. Like, I'm not sure. There aren't too many teams that have, like, the perimeter defenders to deal with one of those guys, much less both of them. And if they're both on the tear, then you're just, yeah. You're praying and wishing for the best. But, yeah, I think between 5 and 7 is where I have DeMar. Like, I can't – what happens when a guy like this has a hot stretch, it turns into, hey, he should just be – like, I struggle with what MVP consideration means.
Uh-oh, here we go. I love it. Let's go. Let's do it.
And, like, this isn't limited to DeMar. Like, this goes back to the Chris Paul thing. It's just like, why can we not just acknowledge that a guy is playing really well?
Or the hell we do it?
Like, because even if we say, okay, DeMar DeRozan deserves MVP consideration because of how well he's playing, the consideration is 5 at best. So, like, what does that mean in the grand scheme of things?
It means he's considered one of the best 5 players in the league right now.
Even that. Yeah, okay. I don't want to get rid of the goodwill. But, like, I wish we had a better way to do that, I guess. And like, this is just me just on my soapbox, I suppose. Like, if I'm in the minority, fine. It's not the first time I've been in the minority or something. But like, again, like that's part of what bothered me about the Chris Paul thing last year. Cause one, it's that. And two, it's also just ignoring everything else that was happening in Phoenix to make the Chris Paul case, which wasn't really fair. And even if you made the Chris Paul case, it's like, okay, he still hasn't been better than Jokic or Giannis, or it was just a whole thing. But like, I don't know. It's a nitpicky thing. When I hear this guy deserves MVP buzz, to me, that means, okay, this guy has a legitimate argument to win MVP.
Ah, those are two different statements.
I guess that's just where I part with it. Cause like that's my interpretation of it. Like, if I were to write about how great DeMar DeRozan has been, it's okay. He's been all NBA good. This first, man, or second team.
Like, can't wait to see your all NBA team. You got like 20 people on it right now.
I don't, but like, we will cross that bridge when we come to it. But like, it just bugs me, because then it just turns into arguments about nothing. It's just like, what are we doing? Now we're taking away from what's happening.
And the whole thing is technically a basketball debate about nothing, but that's fine. Question for you. Is Fred VanVleet a pure hooper?
Oh, Lord. Fred VanVleet is an all-star.
But is he a pure hooper?
I hate this question. He's very good at basketball, yes.
Is Kyle Kuzma a walking bucket?
Are we going to talk about the Texas tweet?
What? Oh, no. Nope. All right. Zion or Ja?
It's funny. Like, I think we broached this on the pod before. And I said, I think I'm firmly going Ja at this point.
Okay. I was just trying to get you back in the good graces in Memphis. Okay.
I appreciate the lob.
And they said, don't come on Beale Street for a little bit.
Ah.
Give you the blues.
Okay. I'll allow it. Thank you for listening to this episode of The Dunker Spot. If you have not already, please subscribe to us. We are on Apple, Spotify, Google, Stitcher, Podbean, wherever you get your podcasts, you can find us. You can find me on Twitter at NikaiasNBA. You can find Steve on Twitter at SteveJones20. And with that, we will catch y'all later in the week with some rookie talk.
The Martin twins are really good.